98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Doug and Wolf's Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by 72 Sold. Get the price for your home at 72sold.com.
Big pressure right here on Bear, as if Bear does a good job in replacing Maloney today, who will be back, and she'll be back tomorrow, he has a choice. He might either A, get to replace Maloney on Rush Hour Reboot, or B, 72 Sold might give him a home. So this is a big deal.
I'll take the second one.
This is a big, well, it's only if you do it well. It's only if this goes well. So we'll see if Bear earns one of those two things, his own beautiful part of the program or a house. Bear, under pressure, go.
Pull that off the logger real quick. Okay. DeAndre Hopkins yesterday addressed the media for the first time since the Cardinals acquired him from the Houston Texans in exchange for David Johnson. And he talked about what he wants his relationship with Kyler Murray to be like.
My expectations is us becoming best friends and doing everything together, because I have to be on the same page with my quarterback no matter what for us to be successful as a team, not just him and I.
They want to be the best two friends that anyone could have.
Okay.
How do you guys...
You lost the house.
No.
Right there.
That was so good.
That singing, you lost the house.
I think we'll let the 72 Sold people decide that. Yeah. How do you guys think DeAndre Hopkins and Kyler Murray will mesh together?
Oh, my goodness. You know what? Honestly, I think they're going to be great because they're both great players. Highly talented players. I think they're going to be great, but there's no guarantee. There's absolutely no guarantee that that is indeed going to be the case. I will say this. You have DeAndre Hopkins, who's played with nine different quarterbacks in his 7 years. Nine different quarterbacks in 7 years. Kyler Murray will be the best, in my opinion. We'll see.
By the way, The Hangover, the last movie I've ever seen where I had no idea what was about to happen next and was the loudest person in the theater, and I still apologize to everybody else in the theater for how loud I was laughing the whole time. Secondly, I reject Wolf openly. Just about anybody can guarantee, yes, these two will be great together forever. There.
Just ridiculous.
All right, the Suns are coming off an impressive win over the Dallas Mavericks on Sunday, and point guard Ricky Rubio was on Burns and Gamble yesterday, and he was asked about how much confidence that win gave them as a team.
We just have to play our best every game and grow from there. We can't relax from having success, and we want more. It doesn't stop here.
The Suns play the Clippers today, guys. If they beat the Clippers, how much confidence will you have in the Suns making a playoff run this year in the bubble?
Oh, I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to make any prediction right now. The thing that I want to predict is these guys going out and competing and giving everything they got and getting better. Just listening to Bobby Marks, right? Bobby Marks understands how important these 8 games were to the Phoenix Suns down in the bubble and how much opportunity there was going to be for these young guys to grow and develop. You know what? If they win and get into the playoffs for real, unbelievable. It's going to be fantastic. But to me, they don't have to. Show up and get better as a young team, and then we'll go ahead and let the chips fall where they may.
I was 1% confident that they would go to the playoffs after this experience in the bubble. If they win today, that'll be bumped up to 4% confident. The reason why I'm still 96% confident they wouldn't go is just because you still have all of those teams to pass up. You are still in 13th place, and you have to pass Portland, San Antonio, New Orleans, and Sacramento, and stay within 4 games of Memphis. Just beating the Clippers doesn't do all that, so it's still a long road. But to Wolf's point, it does dramatically increase the confidence of making the playoffs next year.
Yeah.
If they win today and have a nice stretch of 5-3 in the bubble, and after you start 3-0, if they win today, 5-3 is not crazy at all to make a prediction that they could go 5-3. You do that, that is seriously something to build on, because we're not talking about they just won some games against teams even worse than them. They won games in the bubble against the best teams of the NBA. That would be a reason to bring the core of this team back, and that would be a reason to have belief they could be playoff bound next year.
So apparently, no teams in the NFC West can let the Cardinals have their fun this offseason. The Niners, you know, they're still good, but they added Jordan Reed, and imagine if he's back to the old Jordan Reed. And apparently, this story came down yesterday, the Seattle Seahawks are still toying with the idea of adding both, Antonio Brown and Josh Gordon to their roster. And Antonio Brown has already been suspended for 8 games this year, and Josh Gordon, you never know when he's all of a sudden not going to be able to play. But how would you feel if the Seahawks added both of these guys to their roster?
How would I feel about that? I don't know. Antonio Brown, I don't think Antonio Brown's ever going to be the same player ever again. I don't. Josh Gordon, highly talented, no doubt. I don't think it's a game changer for the Seattle Seahawks. I don't. I already think they've got receivers they like an awful lot. I don't think those two guys are going to change the fortunes of the Seattle Seahawks in the future. I think the offensive line might, but I don't think those receivers will.
I look at it. I'm not worried about this signing at all if it actually happens, and any of those three signings. And the reason why I'm not worried is I don't believe by any shadow of a doubt that Jordan Reed could stay healthy for 16 games. It would stink if he's just healthy for the Cardinals games, because it would be a game changer. I don't believe Josh Gordon and Antonio Brown, and this is a football question, and I'll answer it in a football way, but I'm sorry I have to talk about people's personal lives. I don't believe these two men can be productive members of society for 17 weeks of an NFL season. And I don't think they could stay healthy in relative to their issues in the NFL and contribute to winning. So I'm not worried about them at all. And even if Seattle does make those signings, it's not like they were able to trade an overpaid running back for one of the best receivers in the game when they had a need at receiver. So that's still not the best move in the NFC West this offseason.
You think of DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett? Yeah, I don't see either of those guys actually supplanting them.
So, Wolf, do you know what happened on this day in 1993?
No, I do not. 1993. It was a good year, was it not, Bill Belichick?
I think you'll like this one.
11-game hitting streak after a single early, and the pitch is way in. It hit him in the right elbow. He's going to the mound. He's going after Nolan Ryan. Ventura against Ryan. They've got him bear hugged. Ventura fighting Ryan. Ryan being pushed back. Both benches empty. A huge brawl has erupted as Robin Ventura has chased the legend Nolan Ryan, and the Rangers take exception. There are fists being thrown. Diving into the pile late is a White Sox. There are fist fights going on. This one has erupted. This one has erupted. Ventura hit in the right elbow up, and all of a sudden, Ventura raced to the mound. Ryan hogtied him. There were some punches thrown. They went down, and the crowd will be in this one the rest of the way.
Is this the best fight in sports, let alone baseball?
No.
It's pretty close.
No. Hagler Hearns round one. Or Spinks Tyson when Michael Spinks was scared to death. But I
meant in terms of like,
oh,
Donnybrook's and like.
I think he was 47. I think Nolan was 47 years old when this happened.
Just nuggies. It looked like he was giving Ventura nuggies for the most part.
Like his little brother.
Yes.
If you really study it, I swear I think Robin Ventura, in knowing baseball fights, that was one of those things where you could tell that the White Sox are being pushed around a lot, and somebody said, we're not going to take this anymore, because he went out, I think, to defend the White Sox honor, and as soon as he took two steps, I guarantee you he thought, oh, crap, I forgot it's Nolan Ryan.
Yeah.
You just weren't thinking. And then he went out there almost politely, like, I can't believe I'm doing this. I shouldn't be out here. And Nolan Ryan told a great story after this fight, saying, Dave Winfield charged the mound, and I truly realized he came out to annihilate me. And I told myself, I will never be unprepared again if a man comes out to my mound. And he blew Robin Ventura up, and it was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. One of the greatest baseball moments in history. But I can't believe that was 27 years ago. Holy crap.
That is a eye-opener.
That is. Coming up next. Is this game against the Clippers the biggest game for the Suns in years? In a decade? Wow. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. So how would you feel, Wolf, if you hear about somebody on some broadcast team or something like that who is driven through Phoenix, and they start the play-by-play guy starts complimenting the Doug and Wolf show. I'm in town to call this right. Diamondbacks-Astros game tonight. And he's a Houston Astro broadcaster. I was listening to Doug and Wolf, and man, they've got a great show. They do this, they do this. They're just fun. And then the color analyst goes through and says all these nice things about me. And then says, and Wolf does some good things, and that's it.
Well, listen, Douglas, honestly, I'm going to be secure enough in what it is that I do for a living. I will be secure, and I'll move on.
Well, here's why I'm saying that. There's a national broadcast going on, and we pulled this from YouTube, so the quality's not perfect, but it's kind of entertaining here. Mike Breen is talking about teams in the bubble, the national play-by-play guy for ABC and ESPN. And he starts talking about how impressive the Suns are at 2-0. And listen to Jeff Van Gundy jump in and list some things that he's impressed with. And then he'll say, and does some good things, has some good moments.
At Phoenix Clipper game, Phoenix is fun. They're fun to watch, too.
They have done a good job. Monty Williams does an outstanding job with his team. Everyone knows about Booker. Ayton has some good moments. Rubio, same thing. I love Bridges. I love his energy, his intensity, his cutting, and he's improving as a shooter.
Yeah, they've got some good young players.
The number one, it's kind of cool that the Suns are getting the attention of national broadcasters, but I couldn't help but laugh when I heard him. Suns are fun. Boy, Monty's doing great things. Booker, everybody knows about Booker. Ayton has some moments, but I want to talk about Bridges.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I love Mikal Bridges. That's what he said. Jeff Van Gundy.
Mm-hmm.
That right there, if I'm Mikal Bridges right now, my toes still haven't actually hit the ground. Because the reason why I think Van Gundy loves Mikal Bridges is because he sees the potential for a true two-way player that is a really, really good player.
You know, Jeff Van Gundy, whether you like him or not, and I love Jeff Van Gundy, to be honest. I love his color analysts and the things
totally
he does.
Totally agree.
He is one that, as Monty Williams, he embraces the hard. The great phrase that was from Billy Donovan when the Oklahoma City Thunder were up 3-1 against Golden State.
Yeah.
And then Golden State started their comeback, won games 5 and 6, and it was a tough moment of game 7. And Billy Donovan said, it's supposed to be hard. Kind of as the wake up of quit feeling like things are going against you. What did you think winning a championship would be like? It's supposed to be hard. And you look at Mikal Bridges and you say, there's a guy that embraces the hard. And I hope DeAndre Ayton will never worry about what Jeff Van Gundy thinks, but I hope that's one of those things that DA at some point realizes that as knowledgeable people are watching the game, watching the Suns, what stands out to them is everything Booker, of course, but that's what Van Gundy means. We already know, if you follow the game closely, you already know about Booker. It's the realization of how hard Bridges plays and how the basketball IQ is continually improving, how so many aspects of his game you can see. Boy, you must have worked on that. You weren't good at that part of the game, and now you're getting better. You see that work paying off, and it stands out to a guy like Van Gundy, while an Ayton is just, he has some good moments.
Yeah.
And hopefully DA realizes that there's got to be more because your talent dictates there has to be more.
Listen, you know what, Basinonians? We all know that you're going to go out there and have a bad game from time to time. It happens to the very best, does it not, LeBron James? It happens to the very best. You're going to go out there and you're not going to be as productive for whatever reason, right? But the difference between a good player and a great player is the fact that a good player shows up every now and then. A great player shows up all the time. It's a state of consistency is what it is. That's what a great player is. And if DeAndre Ayton never understands that, he's going to be a good player. He's going to be a guy that shows up every now and then, just like Jeff Van Gundy said. But he's not going to be a great player. If, in fact, he wants to be a great player, it's about consistency and doing it over a period of time.
I am amazed, Wolf, when I hate the Lakers, but when I'm watching the Lakers, how hard Dwight Howard plays now.
Oh, I know.
I'm just thinking, Dwight, do you understand what you would have been if this year's mentality went into 15 years ago of work and relentlessness?
Yep.
It is frightening to think of what that man could have been. And when DeAndre Ayton came out, I admit I loved him hook, line, and sinker, and I liked it when people made Olajuwon references. Olajuwon was a really good goalie, a soccer goalie, coming out of his native Africa. He had the footwork, not only from being a soccer player, but the quickness of being a goalie. Then he was a defensive force at the University of Houston. But with the God-given gift and the gift of soccer with the feet and the footwork, combined with relentless hard work, he became one of the greatest offensive forces, maybe the third greatest offensive center of all time. I would put Abdul-Jabbar and Wilt ahead of him.
Wow.
But I could argue he's the third greatest offensive center of all time, and some people might disagree with him who know more than me and say, no, he was number one. And I looked at Ayton and said, you've got the footwork, you've got the body, you've got the athleticism, you've got everything it takes. I agree with people smarter than me saying the Olajuwon reference when Ayton, and I'm talking about when Ayton came out. So far, we have not seen the work ethic or desire that an Olajuwon had to get there. And here's a case where it's standing out to Jeff Van Gundy.
You know, it's interesting you bring up Dwight Howard. One of the reasons why I love watching these games down in Orlando is because of the gnat sound that is coming
from
the floor. I mean, you can hear dudes communicating. And the Lakers, by the way, are loud and lewd in their communication. Right? I absolutely love it. And the guy that does more talking than anyone else is Dwight Howard.
It's crazy.
And that makes sense as a rim protector. But, man, they talk a lot. And the communication is so important when you compete. And Dwight Howard is at the heart of it. It just it encourages me. For DeAndre Ayton, it really does, right? I do believe the light bulb is going to go on in the shed for DA.
I really wish, and to your point, Wolf, about Howard, I really wish Aaron Baines can get on the floor.
Yeah, right.
For that exact same reason. I've sat close enough to at a game to hear him before, or I forget where. But now the idea, you know what, it might have even been when he was with the Celtics, to be honest.
Here comes the screen, mate.
But I don't think he says that.
Oh, I guarantee he says, mate.
But I don't know about on the court as much. But to hear him in Orlando would be a true pleasure for people that love the game.
Yes.
I think you'd really love it. That's a great point. Coming up next, should we be worried about the Diamondbacks? D-backs writer Steve Gilbert of MLB.com. Gil's going to come on and try to say, Doug, calm down. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Sometimes the man on the phone right now ready to join the Doug and Wolf show is the voice of calm and reason. Sometimes this man lives in a utopian world that does not exist and he needs to get his head screwed on straight.
Walt Whitman.
So it'll be very interesting to see which way Steve Gilbert goes this morning as the man who covers the Diamondbacks for MLB.com and dear friend of the show has just joined us. All right, Gil, I'm going to give you a couple numbers. You tell me how you're taking them. The way the Diamondbacks have started this season would normally be an 8-19 April. You know you're dead with an 8-19 April, and don't tell me about the 2019 Nationals. You're 8-19 in April, you're dead. But they're a game and a half out of the playoffs right now. That's it. Game and a half. All right. So, Gil, which way are you going? 8-19 April, or they're a game and a half out? Give me a break.
Well, I think it's I think it's both. Can I go with both? I
mean, no, you can't go with both. What is that?
This is certainly not the start that they had drawn up when they were planning out this season. But again, I know it's 2-8. They played some tough teams. They need to get hot. A five game winning streak in a 60-game season changes things in a hurry. So. I think we need to give it a little bit more time before we get too panicked about their start.
So right now you're saying 3-7 really is not, it's not bothering you. You don't think this is indicative of what we're going to see as the season unfolds.
I don't think that this offense is going to be a struggle as much as it has in these first 10 games. I mean, that's really surprised me is how much trouble they're having scoring runs. I mean, they've hit two home runs in 10 games. I mean, the Marlins have three more home runs than they do, and the Marlins have played three games before that.
That's crazy.
So, I mean,
it's crazy.
I just don't see that continuing. So I guess that's one of the reasons why I'm optimistic. I also think some of their starting pitching will get better. And again, 10 games in, they emphasize getting off to a hot start. And I think one of the things that was interesting in talking with Merrill Kelly and Christian Walker and even Torrey a little bit the other day after their series finale against the Dodgers was, you know, maybe there was so much of a focus on quick start that the guys put a little bit more pressure on themselves than need be, and that makes it very difficult to play when you're a little bit tense.
I'm so glad that you brought that up. Steve Gilbert joining Doug and Wolf, dbacks.com. And here's why. I just into that yesterday morning and brought it up this morning. The juxtaposition of Merrill Kelly, and it might have even been your question, being asked about are guys in the clubhouse gripping because of the situation. And he said, you know, you'd have to ask them, but we had so many meetings about having a hot start and getting off to a start. And then you have juxtaposed that with Torrey saying over the weekend, we got sucker punched by San Diego. If I'm Mike Hazen, I'm kind of looking at this and saying, okay, us bringing up a hot start put pressure on you that you couldn't handle. Maybe I've got talented guys, but I don't have a playoff makeup. If you couldn't handle, you know, a 60-game season under pressure, how could you handle a 7-game series under pressure? Do they have the right guys in the clubhouse?
I think that they do. I think they've got good leadership in that clubhouse. I think, again, you know, you're seeing some teams are having trouble with the COVID protocols. You don't see that with the Diamondbacks. I do think this is a good clubhouse with good leadership. I think we've seen that over the last few years, that there are guys in there that take things very seriously. And I do think they have a good clubhouse. I just think that you know, once it starts going the wrong direction, everybody puts pressure on themselves to try to be the one to snap out of it. And unlike, say, football, where Wolf could just run down and absolutely
yep.
hammer somebody, right?
So
in
true,
baseball,
Steve.
You grip that bat tighter, and it doesn't help. So, I think that's kind of the difference there.
Steve, what do you think Torrey was talking about in regard to being sucker punched by the Padres?
Torrey uses a lot of boxing analogies a number of times. And so I don't think he meant that they weren't ready for it necessarily. I just think he meant they were punched in the mouth. The Padres came out and
okay.
just beat them. That's my guess. I don't think he was suggesting that they were unprepared. Sometimes, you know, when he starts talking his boxing metaphors, everything gets a little mixed up. But that's my take on what he said.
Steve, have you ever been sucker punched?
No, thankfully I have not. Although I will tell you, I think 2020 has sucker punched us all. So
yeah.
If that counts, then yes, I have been.
Yes.
Truth be told, for those of you that don't know, Steve Gilbert is so nice, it's a character flaw. Okay? So there's no way that he's going to be sucker punched. I mean, he's like on a Goldie level where it's just creepy he's so nice.
No.
Okay.
Hey, he was so popular with the ladies, Douglas. He just had to show up and he'd get sucker punched.
That shows some jealousy with Ron Wolfley right there. That means you hit somebody you were mad at about something.
I never did that. I've been sucker punched. Oh, yes.
You know, this is a weird comparison, Gil, and that is I'm going to compare a 6'11", 22-year-old basketball player to a guy that's listed as 6'2", which is full of crap, but a 6'2", 28-year-old left-handed pitcher. When I watch DeAndre Ayton, get the ball on the block and dunk on somebody's head. Get angry and realize I'm more athletically gifted than you. I'm stronger than you. I'm better than you. I'm going to dunk the ball on your head. That's my opinion of DeAndre Ayton. I'm officially there with Robbie Ray. Robbie Ray as a human being is scary nice like you. Really good dude. But Robbie, quit telling me about your mechanics. Quit telling me about your timing's a little off. Quit telling me about all these little reasons why something in the world isn't right. And realize you're better than the other guy. Get him out and make him hit what you've got. Am I right? Do you think the Diamondbacks look at Robbie Ray and say, you're one of the most talented pitchers in the game, just start getting people out?
Well, I think Robbie Ray looks at himself and says that the same thing. You know, I mean, I you can sense the frustration from him. I mean, he's tried a lot of different things. And if it were just a lack of effort or a lack of will, it would, you know, then it would be easier to criticize him. But, you know, you see him trying different things. He's in better shape than he's ever been in. He's tweaking his mechanics because they thought it would help him with throwing more strikes. So he's doing everything. He's just not getting the results. And I think that's got to be, for me, that if that were me, that's got to be so frustrating. And he's able to keep it together. But again, you can tell deep down inside that how frustrated he is with it because he knows he's better than that.
Steve, speaking of results right now, Luke Weaver is breaking my heart. All right, I'm just telling you, he's breaking my heart right now. One player that you're the most disappointed in so far.
Well, I mean, you know, again, I picked Robbie to have a big year. So, you know, that's the player that I've so far been most wrong about. But I still believe that he's going to find a way to put this thing together just because of how hard he's working at it. And Luke Weaver's another guy who, you know, missed most of last year. He's getting back up on the mound and being competitive again. And boy, I don't know. It's been such a rushed summer camp for so many people.
Yeah.
I don't know how you simulate what they're facing now when you're facing your own teammates. And I think that was something I was real curious to see how players on all teams were going to respond to that, because there's no adrenaline, and then you get into a regular season, and there's still really not the same adrenaline because you don't have the crowd there. You know, 50,000 people at Dodger Stadium telling you how much they hate you really can get the blood pumping. So it's hard to read too much into this year with everything else that's going on, and especially 10 games in. Let's see how this thing plays out over the next few weeks.
I'm amazed that they yell with the wine and cheese in their face the whole time. Gil, I'm wondering, sorry to ask you a question that ages you, but how long have you been covering Major League Baseball?
Oh, wow. Well, I started off in public relations for the Brewers back in 1995.
Okay.
And I covered the Firebirds back in 88. So I've been around.
Real. That's real. That's real. So I ask you this question. Whether or not it is time to panic for the Arizona Diamondbacks, in the famous phrase, we're not going to push the panic button, I ask you, as a guy that's been in the game since the late 80s, what does it mean when a team pushes the panic button? What have you seen? What? Wow. They just push the panic button.
I think when you see somebody do something that's totally outside of their nature, I think if Torrey were on the first week of the season to be changing his lineup dramatically from day to day, or if he starts lashing out against players in the media, things that are outside of really what your personality is and what your strengths are, I think that's kind of more pushing the panic button. That, at least in my opinion, or when players try to do too much or, try to be a leader when they're not and speak out, those are the types of things for me that shows that someone's pushing the panic button.
Steve, when is the last time you did read Walt Whitman's Leaves of Grass?
It has been a long time.
Steve,
I hope this isn't a test. I hope the next question is not going to be about it, because it has been a while. So.
No, your empathy is definitely Walt Whitman-like. No doubt about it, my friend. Love talking to you, Steve.
Thank you
so much for your time.
Guys, it's always my pleasure. I just think with everything that's going on in the world, it's nice to worry about baseball, and it's nice to,
I agree with that.
To wonder, right? This is a fun thing to be talking about, even if it's not
totally
fun to watch.
And it always takes you to put things in perspective. At Steve Gilbert, MLB on Twitter, joining Doug and Wolf. Thank you, Gil. Always appreciate it. There's the man that's been following the Diamondbacks for a long, long time. And it's funny, he said when Torrey does things out of the norm, guess what? He moved Cole Calhoun up in the order, and then he just moved him back down so early in the year. That's not normally Torrey. I don't think it's panic. I think it's Torrey realizing we got to get something done. And I love that aspect about it. Coming up next, we've got D-Hop, we've got Kyler Murray. What can they do? They're actually practicing together. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
And we're the three best friends that anybody could have. We're the three best friends that anyone could have. We're the three best friends that anyone can have. And we'll never, ever, 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 ever leave each other.
It's interesting. Paul requested that, coming back to be part of the Doug and Wolf Show. That was nice, Paul. That's nice that you feel that way about it.
Doug, you were the one who was lost. We couldn't find you on that Vegas trip, the whole hangover thing. It was you, Doug, that, had your wedding compromised. And it was unfortunate, but, if I could only remember it, I'm sure it would have been worth it.
Let's hope they are the two best friends that anybody could have on the field on Sunday. Between the white lines.
I was late to my wedding, I admit. It wasn't like anybody was like standing there waiting.
Yeah.
But Jennifer wanted me to do things and bring things to the wedding, and I just forgot.
Well, you know why that is? It's because there is no clock in the game of baseball, and since you got married where? Oh, no, the honeymoon was
No, the
where?
Honeymoon was in Cooperstown.
Oh!
There's no way I could have gotten away with actually having the wedding at home played at Doubleday Field, but that would have been that would have been pretty good.
Paulie, are you into the IPA already?
Wolf, let me tell you, after this morning and what I've been dealing with over here, that's a heck of a suggestion.
Okay.
Let me tell you, that's a heck of a suggestion. My goodness.
I didn't know that there were already there's big time issues there this morning.
I need some Paulie pain pills right now with his stinking wisdom tooth. I'm still spitting blood over here.
Oh, Paulie. Go see my guy, Paulie.
Don't.
This is DeAndre Hopkins. And he's focused on everything with Kyler Murray and what he wants and getting to know him.
It was very valuable. It was something that I think obviously we're going to continue to do once we get free time, a little off time, build chemistry like that. But Kyler getting us together in Dallas was something that I expected of him, something I knew he was going to do. And him being the guy he is, he wants to win. So, that was very expected of him to do that. And we really don't have a lot of time together, obviously, but, we're making the best of it right now. And I really, I haven't had a season where I've, you know, really had a lot of off seasons with a quarterback. So, you know, that's really hasn't been a thing, you know, a problem of the past. And I don't see it, you know, being a problem now.
Well, if Kyler is wondering whether it's his team, just listen to the superstars. Just listen to the future Hall of Famers. It was about halfway through last year when Patrick Peterson said he's the CEO.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him as much. It was November where Larry stood in front of his locker in his Thursday media session and told us it's Kyler's team in not so many words. And now you hear DeAndre Hopkins not only echo that, but just treat it as such. It's not even a question anymore. This second-year quarterback and reigning rookie of the year is the unquestioned team leader. And, Wolf, you tell me, but that's the way you want it from that position.
Paulie, it's so important right now. It's the way it's got to be. The quarterback should be the undisputed leader, and everyone else follows. When you don't have alphas that will follow or you have a quarterback that isn't a leader, the competitive agreement, and I said this earlier, it's just going to break down. You need a bona fide leader at quarterback. You need an alpha dog that will get behind that bona fide quarterback, believe in that bona fide leader, get behind him. When the truth of that statement is misaligned, you got nothing. You got absolutely nothing. And I hate saying this about Jay Cutler every time we talk about it, but it's the truth. He's Exhibit A. Yes, there have been many, many quarterbacks that weren't good leaders and it doomed them, but I don't know if we've ever seen a quarterback that was as talented as Jay Cutler was, where it doomed him because he wasn't a good leader.
When the Cardinals made the run in 2008, Kurt Warner. When the Cardinals made their run in 2015, Carson Palmer.
Yes.
It can be totally different offenses. They can be totally different players with different skill sets.
Yep.
But it's that position that must lead the team. And that was the case.